This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 2, George Bailey's Stance. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, it's another cracker. We bring back George Bailey after the hat debacle last week, but this time we talk about his batting, and we also talk about some players who need some help. One spinner who wants some rules to become a future star. One batsman who wants to know how much bottom hand goes into top hand shots. Great discussions coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to batter cricket and better cricket, no matter who you are. And no matter where you are, my name is David Hinchliffe, and I look after things. And joining me to help you are two cricket coaches with very fine pedigrees. The first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Garraz, I noticed that the summer's out, and you were out there on the tennis courts the other day.
Yeah, but we're doing a lot out there, actually. It's been great. A bit cold, but you just crack on, don't you? Get on with it. And no, it's been brilliant. We've had some really good power hitting work going on. We're doing some excellent tennis ball technical work that we then get the opportunity to see how that's working when we go into the indoor nets early in the mornings, just to see what that's if there's any good transfer going on between those two. Some excellent throwing program stuff going on. So it's all steam ahead, even though we're in different environments.
Oh, it's great, isn't it, to have that, just get outside, you know, even if it's cold. Just to be outside and not in that confined space that you can spend in the Northern Hemisphere, you can spend a long time in those nets, can't you? So you feel
you
like...
You certainly can. And it's been incredible. This morning we had 35 cricketers in three different environments around the campus working at 7 o'clock in the morning, and it was absolutely Baltic, but everybody just cracked on with it, which was awesome.
The monkeys were definitely brass.
They were.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. You getting any outdoor stuff yet?
We haven't done a lot of outdoor stuff, actually. Our site at school is split, so we have a lot of our facilities are about 3 or 4 minutes drive away, in a usually in a coach for the kids. So we haven't done a lot of stuff outside there, but we've actually been quite fortunate with what we've been able to access inside, and we've got quite a lot done. So I'm pretty happy with what the boys have done so far, and they're all enjoying their practice, and they're all working pretty hard. So things are coming along well now. But if there is a chance to get outside, it'd be great.
Last week, of course, we talked about George Bailey and his exceptional headgear, but this week we're going to talk about him again. But this time, we're going to talk about something a bit more to do with his technique, in that he's adopted a very unusual stance in recent one-day internationals, which is to close himself off in the opposite way to not quite the opposite, but a lot of batsmen open their stance up, Shivranin Chanderball being the obvious one. But instead of doing that, Bailey has moved his foot across towards off stump, which has meant that he's closed off, which is a great sin. Yet he seems to be getting a lot of runs against some very good bowlers. So what's the thinking on that, if you were coaching him?
Well, the thinking on that is that he's doing a pretty good job, isn't he, at the moment? And he's made that decision based on doing a pretty fundamental thing that we talk about a lot, which is listening to his own body rather than everybody. And, Akash has written a really good conventional article, which I think any of us could write when we look at George Bailey standing there, or the pros and cons of standing in that position. But of course, people aren't as simple as convention. And it's very obvious to me that George is somebody who views the ball peripherally better out of his left eye than his right eye. So his left eye is being in that overly sideways on position is giving him more scope to use that left eye, so he can anticipate and he can perceive the incoming threat of a delivery and then deal with it accordingly. And also that his left shoulder is the one that he aims with. So the combination of his left motor eye and his left shoulder lead him to stand in this stance and be able to cope with it pretty easily because it's him.
Yeah. There are risks associated with it, though, aren't there, Lavers?
Yeah, there are potential risks, and I think a few of them have been raised in the article, if anyone gets the chance to read it, that
I'll put a link.
Obviously, if he doesn't move well, there's the potential for being a little bit closed off and not being able to access the ball when he gets a bit straighter. And obviously, it does suggest in the article as well that there may be a little bit of lacking of awareness of what to play at, which I don't really agree with, because once he establishes himself in that position and he does it for a period of time, he will adapt and he will understand lines and lengths in the same way that he has done previously. It's a really interesting idea. For me, one of the big positives he's going to get is obviously that power you're going to get and rotational power from opening up your front foot. If you start a little bit more closed off, you're giving more scope for movement, so you can get more movement across the crease while still landing in a pretty well-aligned position. If you open up too far from a conventional position, obviously you're then just going to hit straight across the line of the ball. So from a closed position, he can open up to just a slightly open position, which would be ideal. But he'll be travelling further and ultimately having more opportunity for acceleration there. So there's a potential for more power, and obviously sets him up quite nicely to hit over extra cover, which hasn't been his strength previously and probably going to do quite well now.
I think some of the points that were made in the article, I mean, they're conventional, and you can never blame somebody for having a conventional view if that's the way that they've, you know, their education and what they've been exposed to. But having spent a significant amount of time with Ralph and Bertrand and the action types, I spent the last 2 days with them actually up at Loughborough. We discussed George Bailey because it was a topical thing. And the notion that he's got a blind spot outside leg stump is flawed because his left motor eye gives him huge amounts of peripheral vision. So if we had somebody who was operating with a right motor eye in that position, yes, they would have a blind spot outside leg stump. But actually, that isn't the case for George here because he's got huge amounts of broad peripheral vision coming from that left eye of his. So he can actually see things that are outside the line of his body easier than many players. The other thing which is an interesting is we look at that picture on the article is anybody who has a dominant left shoulder as a right-handed batter will have a backswing that goes further back than somebody who has a right shoulder as a dominant shoulder. And I'll give you a contrast here. So a right-shouldered, right motor eye batter was Kevin Peterson, who had a relatively low backswing. So his right shoulder was his dominant one. He would aim when he was pointing to hit balls. He would aim with his right shoulder. So a cover drive from Kevin Peterson wouldn't start with his left shoulder turning into the ball at all. His left shoulder would play a relatively limited role in it. And his right shoulder would be the thing that aimed and also gave him the power. If you think about Stuart Broad as a bowler, everybody talks about his lack of left side when he bowls. Well, he's been a great bowler for 12 years. He's now number one in the world, although he says he's not the best bowler in his team. But he bowls. He is a right shoulder cricketer. So as a result, he gets that left arm out of the way and bowls with his right shoulder. Well, you know, that works for him because that's the way he's organised. And what George is doing here is he's using his natural strengths, natural way of watching a ball and moving a ball to get the best possible outcome. And ultimately, that is cricket.
And to add to that as well, Stephen Chapman, who is a coach who is a Geordie, I think, originally, but he's in Australia now. And he posted a little video on Facebook talking about it. And he pointed out that it's not quite as close off as you think, because as the bowler is delivering the ball, he has a little trigger of his right foot, which goes back across and brings him into a more centralised position right at the last second. So it looks more severe than it is. And although he doesn't open up even when the bowler is bowling, say, right arm round, it's still not quite as close as it looks dramatically when you are looking at him when he's in his stance.
No, and he makes a fair point there, but he is still, as you can see, I mean, that picture is a classic picture, David, of somebody who is a left shoulder person and is a right-handed batter, picks their bat up high and eyes it with his left eye as well. You know, it's a classic. So I get the considerations that, you know, he's not going to be able to play outside leg stump and whatever. Well, I think he's pretty much put that one to bed, hasn't he, the way he's played for the last few weeks, and in fact a little bit of time before that, before we all saw it on television. You know, he did a lot of stuff in the IPL last year, which is where it started, which he did really well. So, but it's just a great demonstration to me around motorite and around how the dominance of the left shoulder. So for myself, I'm also left motorite and left shoulder. I was very sideways when I played, and I picked my bat up high as a right-handed batter. Incidentally, if you turned the same profile that I've got around as a left-handed batter, then they wouldn't pick the bat up particularly high, because their left shoulder would be behind them rather than in front of them initiating the swing. So Gordon Lord, who you know, is exactly the same motor profile as me. We stand similarly, but when we swing the bat, his bat goes back very short distance and then follows through a lot further, and my bat goes back a long distance and follows through a shorter distance, and that's the way that we are organised.
And does that shoulder dominance, does that affect where the bat is picked up? Not necessarily the height it's picked up, but where it gets picked up? You know, does it get wider outside off stump or more towards middle stump, or does it not make any difference?
Well, the alignment thing, actually, yeah, that does make a difference. And, you know, we've talked about that on the show before. You want the bat to be coming through the line of the ball for as long as possible. But the key ones are those last four or five frames on the downswing leading into contact. You want that to happen. So many of the guys that have backswings that start off around third slip, fourth slip, by the time they get round to swinging the bat down through the ball, actually their last four or five frames are fine. The biggest danger to me is something Marcus Trzaskowski has battled with a bit over his career, is where you actually pull the bat inside. You're so keen to make sure that your back swing is straight that you end up pulling it slightly down towards leg slip rather than taking it back over the top of off stump. And as a result, you then have to come around your body, which compromises control, bat plane, and also your ability to hit the ball hard on occasions as well. So the key thing, you know, I don't mind where backswings start. It's where they get to, and more importantly, what their path is just prior to that ball contact. And in George Bailey's case, he's pretty sound, mate.
Well, that's not necessarily tied to the dominant shoulder.
No, not at all.
Okay, all right. That's a separate question. Okay. Well, we'll save that for another day, perhaps, and we'll move on to the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more you want to say. I've got the questions, so let's get started. First question. Trying to change people with entrenched ideas only leads to failure.
Yes.
No.
Second question. Potential wins nothing.
Yes.
No.
Third question. Great players stick to nothing. They allow what works to stick to them.
Yes.
No.
And now this part of the show is where we answer a couple of listener questions, or questions sent in by people who read the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com. Either way, we do our best to answer them, and then we choose the best question of the week, which wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com or getting us on social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. First question this week is from Durga. And Durga says, I'm Indian, I'm in poor stage in economy, but I want to be a cricketer. My age is 19. Please tell me what kind of rules may be followed by me to become a good future spinner. Rules are increasingly hard to come by these days, aren't they?
Well, I suppose there's two ways of looking at this question. It's one is about pathway, So what is the pathway that he could follow to reach his goals of becoming a professional cricketer? And that's something I can't actually give you any advice on at all, apart from the fact that there will be people within your state that will have the answers to that. So whoever leads your state association in terms of player development or player identification, then I would suggest getting in contact with them and asking them exactly the same question, because for some people it's about knowing where to go to get access to people seeing them, you know, the pathway stuff, which I think is would be really useful to you to go down, and whether you know your cricket's good enough or not, it would just be really good for you to know what your avenues are and what your options are, and then it will be up to other people to decide where you fit on that pathway. And in countries such as India and Pakistan and Sri Lanka, it's not always obvious to everybody what that pathway is. So I'd get in touch with your state association, whoever the head of development or player recruitment or so on is, then get in touch with them, and that will give you a really good avenue towards that. In terms of being a spin bowler and rules around bowling spin, it's very difficult to give you anything specific based on a question as open as that. But I'm going to make the assumption that you do enjoy bowling spin, that you have the ability to get the ball to break off of the wicket. And the crucial thing for me when bowling spin is that we utilise the body. We've talked about the hips before and how important they are and how they drive up through the kinetic chain. And often if we get the hips to rotate square or even in front of square, then it means our release position is going to be slightly ahead of ourselves. And the result of that is going to be that we're going to have more spin and more rotation being imparted onto the ball, because our kinetic chain has been able to finish its job, rather than if we let go of the ball behind our head, then obviously we've still got moving parts beneath us and that transfer of momentum hasn't happened fully to get those fingers and the ball rotating a maximum amount. So make sure your hips are free, they're unblocked, that your legs position on the crease allows those hips to open, and that would be my starting point with nothing more specific than that. If you can achieve those things, and you give yourself a great chance of being able to ping the ball out with some great amount of revolutions on it.
Lavis, it's hard to assign to rules people even when you know their game inside out, because there's so many exceptions to the rules, aren't there? So how do you even begin to start saying to someone, right, these are the rules for you?
Yeah, I guess you're probably going to say that these aren't kind of hard and fast rules, but there are guidelines, and we can offer guidelines and we can offer recommendations, and maybe we can give people the awareness of why things work, rather than saying that this is something you must do. So obviously, Gareth has suggested there that aligning our base to allow our hips and shoulders to move freely is something that will allow us to rotate and subsequently impart spin on the ball. Now, that is something which as long as he has an awareness of that, he can start to apply it into his own game. And it might be that his hips and shoulders really struggle, and maybe he can look at that and that's an adaptation he can make. Or it might be that even though he's not particularly open with his feet, but he's got that hip and body flexibility that allows him to work quite well anyway. I'd also say that the more you are a finger spinner, the more open you do need to be, because there's more reliance on our body working through a lot more. Whereas if you think about a wrist spinner, there's probably more reliance to be sideways on, where they can get up and over the ball and then they can bowl the ball out of the back of the hand and turn it in both directions. I think we talked about an optimum starting position for a finger spinner actually being close to 45 degrees than the more conventional sideways on, which was probably a few months ago now. But in terms of generating rotational power, that would be a better starting point. So you've got to kind of bundle all the different ideas and theories together and work out what fits what you're trying to achieve, what fits the potentially the weaknesses you have in your game and what helps you retain the strengths you have in your game. The key things are obviously being able to spin the ball on a variety of surfaces. So can we spin the ball in a range of directions? That doesn't have to be a full 360 degrees, but it ideally has to be, can we be spin the ball sideways and spin the ball forwards and sideways and potentially forwards? Can we bowl at a suitable pace that's level relevant to the surfaces we play on and the people we're playing against? And can we bowl with a repetition of action that's going to allow us to put the ball where we'd like it to be more often than not? And from there, you might be able to identify where you need to improve, and then you can start thinking about where that improvement needs to be made.
It's just about playing around with your own delivery types, you know, rather than doing anything conventional. And Sam talked about spin this way, spin that way, forward spin. The way to do that is just experiment, to mess about with balls from hand to hand, throwing balls out and trying to see what happens when, if you throw it up against a wall, but you get a bounce just off the wall. So you bounce it into the wall and then you get, you know, maybe throw it up against the wall and see what reaction comes off of the wall from different wrist and finger positions. And really experiment with various different things. Maybe experiment with the how you hold the ball on the seam, you know, sticking it further back in the fingers, at the end of your fingers. You'll get a feel for what works for you and what you and what variations you can achieve by just tinkering around. And that's what the best bowlers do. They're forever adapting and just tinkering, trying to find that next little bit of X factor, I suppose, that can give them a bit of a head start in the game, make them more difficult to read, and also make the ball deviate in different ways off of the pitch and also through the air, because every time you look to try and get a different spin off of a pitch, it generally brings around some different trajectories in the air as well. And it is about deception spin, you know, and much about deception around the great bowlers in the world comes before the ball bounces, not as the ball bounces. You know, and again, messing around as much as you can, getting a really good awareness of what you do and then how you can push the envelope a little bit with grips and pressures and all of that. And all of a sudden you get into that world of mastery, and then you're in business as a spin bowler because you can start playing with batters then.
So what I'm really hearing here is that the rule is to keep bowling and keep bowling and keep bowling and keep trying things.
Well, it is.
And find out what your rules are.
Definitely, from a sort of fingers point of view, absolutely. I'm sure of that. But there are, you know, there are some pretty basic question was about rules. There are some pretty basic principles rather than rules, I'd call them, that give people a good chance of using their body to generate spin. And that hip, we know, is really, really crucial. And it's not just how you align it, it's also about that mobility. And one of the crucial areas of a body which often gets blocked is the hips. And yet there's very little awareness or application of how we keep developing the ability for those hips to be able to move freely. The more they can move freely, the more effect that's going to have on your outcome as a spinner.
Okay, next question is from Cameron. And Cameron says, I wanted to know how much exactly the bottom hand is used in order to play top hand shots effectively. Now, this is one interested in me because traditionally we think of top hand shots and bottom hand shots, but there's a lot more interplay than that. I mean, the hands work together, don't they, in every shot?
Yeah, absolutely they do. I think this is probably something that Gara's might relate back to the kind of the dominant shoulder thing again, where one hand's working more than the other. But you can look at guys who play Test cricket and you can see some are very much dominant with one hand or the other, yet the outcome seems to work pretty well. So if there is a top hand or a bottom hand shot, I think you'd be pretty tough pressed to kind of push it these days. And again, that's probably quite a traditional question that you're coming in with, kind of saying a top hand and a bottom hand shot. But if I was to pinpoint one shot that I said was completely one thing, you'd be pretty hard pressed, because looking around international cricket and first class cricket, there's so much variation in the way people go about playing things. So ultimately, I'm guessing Cameron's coming from the point of view of how am I going to get better? How should I use my bottom hand? And ultimately, he's got to work out what's going to suit him and what's going to be the most effective method for him. So if he is having problems with it, there might be little changes he can make in terms of how he holds the bat or how tightly he squeezes it or how he moves his arms. But it's going to be a completely personal thing for him. You can look at the likes of your Adam Gilchrist, who held the bat in a specific place, which was fairly high up the handle. And then you can look at Sachin, who held the bat fairly low down. And then you could even look at someone like Faf du Plessis, who spreads his hands pretty wide with quite a big gap between top hand and bottom hand. So there's three people who are playing test cricket to a pretty good level, and they're completely different in what they do. And then you'll probably find a lot of guys who are completely different to that, in that they just have two hands fairly close together in the middle of the bat. So yeah, there's not going to be a one rule for everyone, but you need to find out what the method is for you rather than what it is for the general public.
Gareth, is there a big variation in the way that people use their bottom hand in what we would say are top hand shots, like driving?
I think conventionally we all know how we grew up learning how to play the game, didn't we? That the top hand steers and the bottom hand adds the power. But we also know that now that people aren't always as conventional as that. They don't fall into that very convenient bracket of doing that. And it has an effect on all shots, not just on whether we perceive them to be top hand shots or bottom hand shots. And I assume when we talk about top hand shots, we're looking at straight drives and cover drives and back foot drives is the things that, you know, when I recall my youth learning these things, and the bottom hand shots, you'd say were more likely to be the pull and the cut, I suppose, with the two main ones. But actually, you know, it doesn't really work like that. And some players will actually steer the ball, direct the ball with their bottom hand, and because of the way that they're organised, get their power from their top arm and top hand. So it's not a simple cut and shut case. It's, you know, because people aren't as convenient as that. You know, and I'm watching here, for example, Kumar Sangakkara, that we all love to watch bat. Hey, you know, he's a phenomenal batter. And going back to Sam's point earlier about dominant shoulder, when he drove the ball, he never used his front shoulder to point towards his cover drive ever. So it would be his left shoulder, which in his case is his back shoulder when he bats, and his bottom hand would be the thing that would be aiming towards the ball. So he would drive, not playing a conventionally top-handed shot, but he would play it very much with his bottom hand being the aimer, which would be completely against convention. But yet when we watch him bat at full speed, he's lovely to watch, you know. I don't get caught up in all of that sort of stuff anymore. The key thing for me, as I said before, is that we get the bat going back through the ball for as long as possible. Those last five slides, if you're filming at 25, 30 frames per second, if you can pause it and then go down through the ball and you can see the bat coming through the ball for those five frames previous, then you've got a pretty good backswing and downswing there, to be brutally honest with you. And that's something that he did, because actually his backswing started quite wide and then came in and he was able to hit it in very conventional areas, even though he started wide. So the way that the hands work in that is very, very individual. The crucial thing is that somebody can do it. And if they can't do it, then you can explore different ways of swinging the bat and different ways of maybe getting tension between bottom and top hand to achieve the ultimate outcome, rather than getting stuck on the dogma that when we play a back foot drive, a front foot drive, it's a top-handed shot, because it isn't always the case for everybody.
And what would be some practical things, some drills or some things that people can take if they feel like they can't do it in the way that they've been told and they want to try a different way?
Well, I think a really good one is to get some underarm feeds in, just bobbling along, like a really basic bobble feed, and then ask the person to hit the ball with just their top hand on the bat, and then get them to do five or six of those, and then get them to hit the ball with the bottom hand on the bat. And what you'll see very quickly is which one acts as the power and which one acts as a steerer, because they'll obviously be independent of each other through that time. One you'll have much more control on, and the other one you might have more speed in the bat movement with. And it might not give you control, but it certainly will give you speed. And then have a look at that. For some people, it will be very equal between the two. They can control and power with both of them. But you'll get a really good view of a coach about those idiosyncrasies, about those preferences of that player by doing that particular drill. And then, of course, when you get two hands on the bat doing that very simple tennis ball drill, then you'll see the two work together in harmony. It doesn't mean to say that the top hand is always the one that aims and steers, because that isn't always the case, but you'll see the two working together. And it's that coherency that we're looking for between the hands. They don't have to replicate each other. They don't have to have specific roles. They just have to work together at the point of contact and leading into a point of contact. Soapbox time here on the show, and the boss, our big friend David Hinchcliffe, getting up there. It will be spot on the money. I'm not even going to put my stopwatch on this week, mate.
I'm reading an interesting book at the moment. It's an audio book, but I don't know if reading's the right word, but you know what I mean. And it's about mastery. And it's not necessarily about mastery of cricket skills. It's about mastery of anything. And one of the things that I've got from this book is that when someone is learning something from someone else, it's not always a one-way thing. In fact, what you're striving to achieve, whether you're the learner or whether you're the person imparting information, the coach, the guru, whatever you want to call it, you need to be able to have it as a two-way process. You work with the person works with you, and together you work out exactly the way to move forward. Eventually, that coach will become redundant because the player becomes their own learning machine. But in that process of becoming a better player, they need to work together with someone rather than it being a one-way process. And that is the end of the show for another week. We are just about to leave, but before we go, we need to decide on one thing, which is the winner of the competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two people in the running this week are Durga with his question about rules for a future spinner, and Cameron's question about the interplay between the bottom hand and the top hand. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Durga's one, because I think we gave a pretty good answer, but also giving you an option of where you go to try and find the pathway. And if you do know the pathway, I'm convinced that a number of our listeners won't necessarily have an understanding of their pathway. So more understanding of that, you know who to go to, you know who to try and impress, and it will help your journey a lot better.
Congratulations. And for everybody else listening who didn't win, but they were thinking perhaps they have a problem that they want to have answered and they definitely want to win a prize, how could they get in touch with us, Gareth, to enter that competition?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. You can also get us on social media, as I mentioned before. Twitter is @pitchvisionacad and Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can also listen to the show every week. You can subscribe for free by going to your podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you want to stream the show via the web, or if you want to look at the show notes or look at other articles, then you can do all that on the Pitch Vision website. Go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. You get all the old shows there. You can download them, you can stream them, you can look at the show notes, you can do whatever you like there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.
Fab. Thank you.